See how great a love the Father has bestowed upon us, that we should be called children of God, and such we are. And I certainly do hope in the years to come that as we are a part of your congregation, that we'll really end up feeling like family, that we will be comfortable together, that we'll be able to share things together, and that our relationship is going to go beyond just the superficial, that we're not a Boy Scout troop, that we're not a PTA, this is not Weight Watchers. You know, this is not a superficial, human, worldly group that we're a part of. We're part of God's family. We're His kingdom in this world. And our relationship has to reflect that. Jesus said something very interesting, as Jason Amelong already read this morning in Matthew chapter 12, verses 46 through 50. Jesus' own mother and brothers came to him at one point, requesting to visit with him. Somebody said to him through the crowd, "Did you realize your mother and your brothers were outside and they wanted to see you?" And Jesus looks around at the people listening to him teaching, the people following him who are clamoring to enter the kingdom. He says, "Look at this. Look at this. This is my mother and my brothers and my sisters, those who are part of the kingdom." Physical family members are only in this life. Your mom is only going to be your mom as long as the two of you coexist on this planet together. After that, you're just souls in God's kingdom. Your brothers, your sisters, even your own spouse. Marriage is for this life only. And in the afterlife, we are neither married nor given in marriage. So your spouse is only in this lifetime as well. The only relationship that is going to last for eternity, the only family that will still be here, is God's family, His kingdom. What impresses me most about this idea in Matthew chapter 12 is that God never considers anybody a black sheep in His spiritual family. He never regards one child as more important than the other, because, hey, it was His own actual mother and His own actual brothers who came to see Him. But in the crowd, one face, one soul, one person is as valuable to Jesus as even His own mother. Think about that. When His own mother, who brought Him into this world, came to see Him, Jesus looked at her and said, "You are all my mother and my brothers and my sisters. You're all that part of me." Which is why in Hebrews chapter 2, verse 11, He is not ashamed to call us all His brothers. Now, with all that being said, in what ways is the spiritual family bond expressed between Christians? For the rest of this lesson, I want to look at the practical ways that you and I are going to share this family experience with each other. I certainly hope that you'll find it to be a practical lesson, and I certainly hope that this is a lesson that maybe you will look at and consider in the future. Am I being as much a part of God's family as I ought to be? Am I participating in this family the way that I should be? And am I prioritizing things in the right way? The first thing to realize is that you have more than one set of parents when you become a part of God's family. Yes, you have your physical father and your physical mother, but the thing we have to remember is that sometimes your physical father and your physical mother aren't perfect. Now, my dad probably thinks he's perfect sometimes, but they're not perfect. And they're going to fail us just like any other human being is going to fail. Some of us, not me personally, but some of us in God's kingdom can look at our experience with parents and quite honestly say it wasn't a good experience at all. Some people say, "I had a bad father. I had a father who abandoned us, who left us, who beat on us. We had a mother who was not there for us, a mother who was emotionally distant." So the idea of when you become a part of God's kingdom, it is very reassuring, that idea that you have more than one set of parents. For all the failures that we might have with each other, in an abundance of parents, in an abundance of counselors, as Proverbs 11 and verse 14, we find victory. My dad's not around to do those things, and I'm 30, and I still look to my dad for a lot of things. And in a sense, some of you are going to have to become that adopted spiritual father. Same with brothers. My brothers live far away. I don't have brothers to go to football games with, so I'm going to have somebody to go watch Oregon beat on the Sun Devils every other year. Somebody has to man up and come with me. But again, you're my brothers, you're my sisters, you're the parents that Rebecca and I need in our immediate lives. And I hope it's the same with each and every one of you together. Where there is no guidance, the people fall. But in abundance of counselors, there's victory. When you look to the elders and their wives, those are the counselors that we look to. When you look to the older men, the older women, when you look to people who've been parents for more than just a few months or a few years, when you look to people who've been parents for decades now, that's where you find victory. Obviously, our own parents are our first line of defense, and they ultimately carry the weight of responsibility for raising us. But really, in God's kingdom, it becomes that idea of raised by the community. The community is going to help raise our children. The community is going to help us get through the problems that we experience in our lives. In Mark 10 and verse 29, it reminds me of this. In Mark 10 and verse 29, notice what Jesus says there. "Truly I say to you, there is no one who has left houses or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children for my sake and for the gospel's sake," he says, "but that he shall receive 100 times as much now in the present age, houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children." Becoming a part of God's family means taking on a lot of other new friends, a lot of other new relationships. And they're meaningful relationships also. You notice that when Jesus is talking about this, of leaving your own father, leaving your own house or brothers and sisters, he doesn't say, "And when you enter the kingdom, you will inherit many, many times more close acquaintances. You will inherit many, many times more business contacts. When you've left houses or brothers or sisters or mothers or fathers for my sake, you will find a whole lot of people in God's kingdom to say, 'Hey, how was work going this week?' 'Oh, good. Well, cool. See you next Sunday.'" No, he says, you find brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers. You find homes in God's family. And the more willing you are to leave behind the ways of the world and abandon those things, the more you will see the investment in God's kingdom. And the closer you'll get with people. You take a case in point here. Consider Timothy. When you read about kind of what we have, at least in the Bible, of Timothy's upbringing, I would say at best his father seems very indifferent. If his father is even alive at all, in Acts chapter 16 and verse 1, you meet Timothy. It only mentions his father briefly, but in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 5, you find out it was not his father who taught him the gospel. It was not his father who taught him the faith. It was his mother and his grandmother. The Apostle Paul then, in a sense, becomes the spiritual father and the role model that he was really looking for. He notes that in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 2. Look at the kind of language that Paul uses of Timothy. He says in 2 Timothy 1 and verse 2, "To Timothy, my beloved son." These are people who are not related physically, but they had a relationship that was deeper than a physical father and a physical son. And Paul was not ashamed to look at this young man, Timothy, and say, "To Timothy, my beloved son." Christians are supposed to treat each other like family members. 1 Timothy 5, verses 1 and 2. "Do not sharply rebuke an older man, but rather appeal to him as a father." He doesn't say appeal to him like a Santa Claus, or appeal to him like a crazy old neighbor. He says you appeal to that man like a father. To the younger men as brothers, the older women treat as mothers, and the younger women as sisters in all purity. In God's family, nobody is an only child. When we became Christians, we instantly inherited all sorts of new brothers and sisters, some of whom we'll come to depend on much more than those with whom we share genetic material. I can't tell you how many Christians I've met who are closer to other Christians than they are their own family members, the physical family members. especially when you encounter Christians whose family members are not also Christians. Maybe you've had an experience like this also. When we've tried to talk to family members who are not Christians, there's always just kind of that barrier that at least I feel. I almost feel more comfortable showing up at a church with complete strangers than I do going to my own family reunion sometimes. Honestly, I can say right now, standing in front of you, half of whom I don't remember your names yet, half of whom I only remember your names because I've been studying the directory, I feel more comfortable right here than I do at my own family reunion. Because when you're surrounded by people who are not Christians, what do you share? What do you talk about? What do you talk about with people like that? When you become a Christian, you have to be careful to avoid all the hang-ups. Avoid bringing the baggage with you that you had from your own family. Sometimes, for example, sometimes we bring an only child syndrome to God's church. We expect to be catered to. If you were an only child, then I'm sorry about that. And if you were an only child, there's kind of this classic stereotype of only children. And only children think they're the center of the universe. Now, I'm not saying that's true. I'm not saying that every only child is like that. But be careful that if that was you growing up, be careful not to become a part of God's family and expect the same treatment. Sometimes we come with a preconceived idea about being one of many siblings. Maybe you have middle child syndrome, perfectionism. Or maybe you have youngest child syndrome, which means that you think the world is yours. Mom and Dad love you more than the other two brothers because they had to practice so hard on the first two to get it right with the third one. That's what my younger brother says. See, I'm the middle. See, Kyle thinks he's the best one. I say, they started off with Michael, did the best they could, did it right with the middle son, and with the third son, they just kind of had to deal with what little energy they had left. There you go. That's Goodwin Family Structure 101. But don't worry. Michael's an awesome Christian. Kyle's an awesome Christian. They married awesome Christians. So we all turned out all right in spite of the order in which my parents had us. But again, the emphasis is be careful that if you had some kind of hang-up in your family, don't bring that baggage with you into God's family as well. You may have felt neglected as a child or as a teenager, and now you're unwilling to open yourself up to more hurt feelings and disappointment. You might have said, yeah, I didn't have a good upbringing. I didn't have a good family experience. So now I'm closed off. I don't let people in. I don't show my sensitive side. I don't want people to know how I really feel about things. That's not how it's supposed to be in God's family. If you cannot cry in front of anybody else in the world, you can cry in front of God's people. Because Romans 12 says we laugh when others laugh and we weep when others weep. Don't be afraid that if you had a bad experience in your family growing up, this family's different. This family's different. And the same is true of parents as well. We read all this language of how God is our Father. And how often in the Bible is God referred to as our Father? What if your father beat up on you? Maybe that language isn't quite so comforting at first, is it? That God is a father, and what you think of as a father is a man who beats up on you. We've got to leave that behind and realize for the imperfections that we had in our own physical families. We replace all of that and so much more when we become a part of God's kingdom. Now, God's family is not perfect. We are not perfect people, to be sure. But there's a big difference between those who are striving to go to heaven and working together on it, and those who aren't even trying. Proverbs 18, verse 1 is a good reminder. that when you become a part of God's family, don't close up. Don't close up. Don't see it as this just kind of superficial relationship that we're supposed to have with each other. Like it puts it in Proverbs 18:1, he who isolates himself seeks his own desire. He quarrels against all sound wisdom. I don't know about you, but I can't take this burden all by myself. I can't go through life all by myself. I need other Christians badly. I can't be a preacher all by myself. I couldn't imagine doing it without Rebecca, and I couldn't imagine doing it in a congregation of people that didn't support the work. We need each other badly. You are now on a very talented team. When you're part of God's family, you fill a role. And everybody else around you is filling a role as well. We're all something different. You know, in your own family. In your own family, there's people who fill different capacities. And one family member is really good at something over here. Another family member is really good at something over there. But together as a family, we all kind of fill each other in. We complete each other. And somehow or another, the family unit chugs along. Well, God's family is just like that also. We're not all supposed to be the same. That's what Romans chapter 12 and verse 6 talks about. Since we have gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, your gifts are going to be different than my gifts. There's a lot of things I'm not good at. And there's maybe one or two things I'm okay at. I can kind of preach and I can kind of run. And that's it. That's all I'm good at. You're going to have things that you're good at, though. You're going to have things that you do in God's family that's going to complete the work. And if you don't think you're important, you're very, very wrong. If you don't think you have anything to offer or to give, then you must think Romans 12, 6 is a lie. Because according to the grace given to us, we all have gifts. You're good at something. And you're important in this family. And you're necessary in this family. When you're gone, you're missed. When you're not working, the whole family is missing something. Now, who are you in this family? We'll step away from kind of the typical roles, mother, father, sister, brother. We'll take a step back from those. Who are you in this family? Now, I will admit some of these are kind of comical, but there's a point behind all of them. I should add, they're all good. Maybe you're the loud, obnoxious aunt. Everybody has one. Think about it in your own family. Everybody has kind of that family member that's just really, really loud. And she's always in your business. And she asks questions that nobody else is willing to ask. Those uncomfortable kinds of questions. You know, well, what'd the doctor say about it? Did it spread? You know, that sort of thing. And you're like, who asks that? The loud, obnoxious aunt. That's the one who asks it. Sometimes the questions are piercing. Sometimes the questions are hard to listen to. But we love that family member because she is willing to get her hands dirty when nobody else is. We love that family member because she's willing to say what needs to be said. And she'll yank you back from the fire. If you're doing something wrong or living incorrectly, she'll tell you. When everybody else is trying to be polite about it, she will give you the straight answer about it. We need that in God's church as well. In God's family, we need to have people who can set decorum and politeness aside and yank you back. And tell you the truth when you need to hear it. Consider in Jude. Go to the book of Jude and notice what Jude says here. Somebody has to be willing to do this. Look here in Jude verse 20. But you, beloved, building yourselves up on your most holy faith, praying in the Holy Spirit, verse 21, keep yourselves in the love of God, waiting anxiously for the mercy of our Lord Jesus Christ to eternal life. And have mercy on some who are doubting. That's gentle. Those who are doubting, be gentle about it.
Save others, snatching them out of the fire, and have mercy on some with fear, hating even the garment polluted by the flesh. I love that idea in verse 23 of save others, snatching them out of the fire. Sometimes politeness just doesn't work. Sometimes you need to have somebody who will yank you back. In Genesis chapter 19, Lot needed someone to yank him back also.
We need to have people like that who will tell you the answer straight up, even though you may not like it. That's Genesis chapter 19, verse 16, as Lot is getting dragged away from Sodom. Sometimes we just need to be dragged away from the things that are hurting us. Maybe in God's family, you're the one with the quiet inner strength. That family member who, with just a few words, can quiet the room. Coincidentally, my loud, obnoxious aunt is married to my uncle with the quiet strength. And with just a few words, that uncle can calm a room down. He doesn't say much, but what he says is filled with wisdom and grace. Patience. I think James the Apostle was that in God's family. When you read in Acts chapter 15 of this argument that they were having about what we're going to do with the Gentile converts. Do we circumcise them? Do they keep the Sabbath? Do they follow the food laws? What are we supposed to do with Gentile converts? And they're having this fuss about it. You notice that James, I believe is here in Acts chapter 15 verse 13. James kind of quiets the room. And it seems like everybody hushes. And with just a few words, James says his piece. And everybody looks around and goes, okay. We agree. All right. We need to have people like James in God's family. We need to have people who will calmly sit and listen. They'll listen to both sides of an argument. When Christians are fighting with each other, when we're having trouble, strife in our marriages, we need a James who will kind of sit back and listen. And when all has been said, he'll say his part, remind everybody what God has to say, and let it be. We need that in God's family. Maybe that's the role that you fill in God's family, is the one with the quiet strength. In 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 3, what are some of the words that are used to describe the qualifications of elders? Temperate. Uncontentious. Never pugnacious. Gentle. Those are words that describe our elders. Those are words that describe the one with the quiet inner strength. Maybe in God's family, you're the excitable cousin. And again, everybody has one. Everybody has that family member who wants to break with tradition. Somehow, families, they always get wrangled into going on ridiculous vacations. Hey, let's all load up the car and... These are the families who, instead of a Christmas tree, they want to set up a palm tree and decorate it. You know, they want to break with tradition. Those are the excitable cousins. They've got new ideas. They spark the family with crazy and exciting endeavors. God's family needs these people as well. God's family needs people who are going to want to learn new songs. God's family needs people who are going to be willing to say, you know, we've always done it a certain way. And as long as we can still follow God's word and we're not violating anything, why don't we try to find a better way to do it? People who are not constrained by just pure, plain tradition, but are willing to take the family to a place that maybe the family didn't think about going before. We need that excitable cousin. The in-law whose value becomes inexpressible. You know how it is when somebody marries your brother or marries your sister, and you kind of look at it with some skepticism at first? Like, I'm still not sold on you, Brian. I'm still not sold on you yet. You know, you look at it with some skepticism, but then you realize after kind of the walls break down, you realize, you know, this guy's all right. You know, this girl really is awesome.
the in-law really is a part of the family. Sometimes what happens in a congregation, especially a growing church like Monte Vista's, we get new families in, or we convert people, we baptize folks. And what tends to happen is we kind of view them like in-laws. They weren't part of the original Monte Vista. They're not Monte Vista original members. They're not Gold Star members or legacy members or something like that. And you know, we're happy that you're here. We're happy you're baptized. But you know, we're going to be over here, and you can just go home. Okay. What tends to happen in growing congregations is that we treat new members as if they were in-laws. We need to break the barriers down, break the walls down of new members and new converts. And they need to become a part of God's family. We need to welcome them, not make them feel like outsiders or newbies or rookies or anything. We need to welcome people into God's family. One person said, according to Barry Kirchival, who knows, who's done a lot of research on personal evangelism, Barry Kirchival said that he had heard from somebody that statistically, in order for a new convert to stick with a congregation after 6 months, that they need to have at least 6 very good relationships with church members by the 6-month mark. And if a person has not made at least 6 really good friends within 6 months of being a part of a church, that person is most likely to fall away. We've all seen folks like that. You know, you baptize them, they're all excited, they're new converts, and about 6 months later, you're looking around going, say, whatever happened to that guy? You know, we baptized him, and he came to church for a while, he was coming on Sundays and Wednesdays. Whatever happened to that guy? Maybe what happened is he didn't make real good friends. Now, that might be his fault. Some of that's got to be on him as an individual, but we need to make sure as God's family that we don't make people feel like they're the in-laws of the church. Every family, and this is your last one here, every family also has an organizer. You know that family member, the family member who always sends out the emails about, you know, gift exchanges and making sure we're all on the same page on family reunions and where's Thanksgiving going to be this year and where are you going to be traveling to there or coming? That's the family organizer. And every family needs one or else we'd be eating Thanksgiving dinner at Denny's. Okay, without the family organizer, we'd all show up on Thanksgiving and go, well, I want the gobbler special, Flo. We need the organizer in God's family just as much as we do in our own families. We need the people who are going to be on top of things when it comes to the duty roster for worship assignments, when it comes to making sure that less fortunate families in the church are taken care of, that they're fed. Homebound members are being visited. People in the hospital are being visited and encouraged. We need members who are going to stay on top of those of us who are a little bit more lazy. We need the organizer in the church. We need the organizer in God's family. Now, maybe you're one of these family members. Maybe you fill a different role, and that's okay. You're allowed to be different. I'm not saying that every one of you has to fit somehow into one of the pigeonholes that I've talked about in this lesson. But I hope that you go away from this experience, this lesson, realizing that you need to be something in this family. You need to be something in this family. And a warm spot on the pew is not being part of God's family. Showing up and leaving is not being part of God's family. Building real and meaningful relationships, loving people the way that God has loved us, caring about people when they're down, rejoicing with people when they're up, knowing more about a person than just that person's name and occupation, that's being part of God's family. And that's what we're trying to build here. 1 Peter 1, verse 22. Since you have, in obedience to the truth, purified your souls for a sincere love of the brethren, fervently love one another, from the heart. I alluded to it earlier in the lesson, but I think a point that needs to be made once more. Your physical family will only be your family for a few years in this world. Your father, your mother, you only share that relationship as long as both of you are alive on this planet. And once we pass into the next life, we are not going to be mothers and brothers, fathers and sisters, sons or daughters. We will not fit that worldly, carnal capacity anymore. Now, if we love our own families, fathers and mothers, if we would give our own lives for our children, husbands, if we would give of ourselves for our wives, if we would love our own families as zealously as we do, and those relationships are temporary, how much more should we love each other in the relationships that are eternal? We will always be brothers and sisters in Christ. I love you very much, and I don't even know you yet. And I look forward to the next decade or 2 decades or 3 decades or however long it is that God thinks I ought to be in Phoenix. I look forward to being a part of your family. And I hope you'll feel welcome into mine. We're part of God's family. Now, if you're not a Christian here this morning, you really ought to be. You really ought to be. If the relationships themselves have not sold you on it, then perhaps Mark 16:16 might appeal to you. That he who believes and is baptized shall be saved, but he who does not believe shall be condemned. You need forgiveness of sins more than anything else. You need to be saved more than anything in this life. And if you are not saved, then you better get yourself into a position where God can rain down upon you the grace that only He can give. So whatever need you might have, please become a part of God's family today. Come forward as we stand and sing.